Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning. I'm Mo Ivory in for Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, we are following breaking news in Washington, D.C., a shooting investigation at a military installation. Plus, staggering numbers since January, there have been 463 fatal police shootings. Now, that's more than the FBI has recorded in an entire year in decades. That and more, Jeb Bush thinks a lack of parenting is the actual reason for the riots in Ferguson and Baltimore. Plus, we're bringing you some unbelievable stories today in what the hell? Like, what happened at a Confederate flag parade in Georgia? All that and more next on News One Now. We start this morning with breaking news out of Washington, D.C. There is an active investigation going on right now into a possible shooting at the Navy Yard in D.C. We are getting this video footage courtesy of NBC4 News in Washington. NBC4 is reporting that the yard is on lockdown as well as the area around the yard. Employees are sheltering in place and there is no independent confirmation of a shooter on the loose. An official with the military tells NBC4 that they have unconfirmed reports of an active shooter. This is the oldest Navy installation in the country. It is the same installation in which a military contractor shot and killed 12 civilian workers 2 years ago in 2013. Again, there is no confirmation that a shooter is on the loose right now. We'll keep you up to date with the latest on this developing story. Now, 1,100. That is the estimated number of deaths by police expected by the end of this year, 2015. An investigation by The Guardian shows that on average, three people are killed every day by police. Now, at that rate, we're looking at reaching more than 1,000 by the end of 2015. And that investigation also shows, and this will be no surprise, that black people are two times more likely to be killed by police than whites or Hispanics. The research also shows that those black victims were more likely unarmed. Joining us on the panel, Danielle Belton, associate editor at The Root, Wesley Lowry, Washington Post reporter, and Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver, leadership strategist. Now, let's just jump right into this. Those numbers are alarming to me. Probably not so alarming if we had numbers in the past, right, to actually compare it against, because I can't imagine that last year wasn't something similar since we've been having a crisis in our nation. Wesley, you wrote about this in the Washington Post. Talk to me about why you have taken on the task of trying to confirm and document these murders.
Of course, and so it's been 11 months since Ferguson, since Michael Brown was killed, coming up on the anniversary. And what I remember is when we all arrived in Ferguson a year ago, we all started covering this story. We wanted to nationalize it. We wanted to write these big stories and say, what does this mean? Is this a one-off anecdote? Does this happen all the time? And what we quickly realized was there was no way to tell that. You had hyperbole on a lot of sides. You had a lot of groups that said black men are being gunned down and murdered in the streets every day by police officers. You had police groups that were saying, this almost never happens. This is an outlier. What we started looking at was these FBI numbers. The FBI puts out a number of shootings every single year, justifiable homicides by police officers. That number is always something like 450, 440, 460. But that is a self-reported voluntary number. There are 13,000 police departments in the United States of America. Only 3% of them report their fatal shootings to that number. And so, according to the FBI, there have not been more than 460 fatal police shootings any year going back to 1976. The Washington Post has confirmed 463 as of last night this year, in 6 months. And so what we know is that the federal numbers are missing at least half of the fatal police shootings that happen every single year. And it's impossible to do analysis of, are these black people being killed, Hispanic people being killed, men, women, the ages, mental health, We can't do those kind. We can't have that type of deep analysis and conversation if we don't have the most basic numbers. How many people were killed?
So I want to get to Avis and Danielle too, but I've got to ask this question before we move on. If you're able at the Washington Post to collect this data, you're one person working with your journalistic team. How is it that the FBI has been unable in all of these decades to get accurate numbers?
Of course, I mean, in part of it's a different tactic. So what we're doing is we are having to do a lot of kind of hard work in the ground, reporting journalism, finding stories that haven't been told otherwise, and also relying on other journalism being done, other local media reports and confirming what they've written. The FBI rather feels as if, it seems as if it can't require these police departments. It doesn't feel like it can require them to report. It can't issue an unfunded national mandate. And so instead, it has always kept its numbers voluntary. If you guys would like to tell us how many people you killed this year, that would be great. We'd appreciate it. And so because of that, that really hurts the integrity of their numbers. There are full states that aren't reflected in their numbers.
That's incredible.
And so it speaks to the need for a push for more national accounting of people being killed by law enforcement.
Legislation, and I can imagine these numbers, they give 400 and the FBI gives 450 justifiable homicides. What's the unjustifiable number? You know, I mean, zero, right? Because who's going to write in and give those numbers? Avis, what, you know, there's legislation that's been proposed by senators to have mandatory requirements. Talk about that a little bit and what that will do. Will they even really do it?
Well, you know, they need to require it. Let's just say it needs to be required, because what doesn't get measured doesn't get changed. And personally, I believe that it's not an accident that this isn't required. There is no sort of imperative to let these numbers out, because it provides a very bad light on law enforcement and how we do business in this country. I mean, I've seen some statistics that suggest that there are more people killed in one day in America than are killed by police in entire countries over the course of a whole year. So what's happening in America is a human rights atrocity, and when we choose not to measure it, we are in essence just choosing to look away.
Danielle, it's almost as if they've been, not almost as if, they have been able to just roam rampant in police departments, do things, have nobody to report to, that never goes up to a higher level. Many times the investigation stays right there. I mean, we've seen it happen so many times. I mean, is this the beginning of something that could change things if we have that information? What will we do with it if we have it?
Well, what I would hope is what we would do with it was we finally would hold people accountable. I mean, the fact is that we don't hold the police accountable often for these things, that they are above the law in many of these cases. They aren't prosecuted in most of these shootings. They're often ruled justified. The fact they don't even have to report them just goes to show that they have, that the police are a protected class within our society, that they can just get away with these sort of things without any accountability. So what I would hope, that if we started keeping track of these numbers, there is a way to hold these officers accountable.
I feel like there's so many pieces to the officer accountability piece, right? We talk about this piece of them having to report, you know, the murders. We talk about doing some kind of mental testing on the police officers to figure out if they have racist attitudes. We talk about making it harder for somebody to become a police officer. You know, like, really, how without wiping everybody clean from the police, you know, stations in all the states and starting all over, can these things work together to begin to see some change? I mean, I just don't feel confident about it, because you can put the recording requirement in. You could put cameras on the police officers. They can still turn them off.
Exactly.
They can. I mean, I just don't know what it will take. I always think it means you have to hurt their pockets. Like, you start making them pay the insurance claims. I mean, I don't know, but I know that money is a big effector. Will legislation, Wesley, do something in this area?
I think you're right. I think money is a big effector, but I think that, and when you speak to that, I think we've seen multiple shifts in policing ideology over the course. It's all cyclical, right? It hasn't always been this way. It hasn't always been quite this way. It's been a little different at previous times. And so one thing I think that we could see that could start to spur some change here is if, whether it be the federal government or even local state governments, started providing and began again providing more money for the types of policing that that incentivizes not having these types of violent altercations. So whether that's de-escalation and retraining officers in de-escalation and rewarding and giving merit awards for that type of de-escalation tactics, whether it be what some people call community policing, and that's a kind of be a heated word sometimes, but more officers on foot engaging their communities versus, you know, but a lot of it speaks again to the mindset of officers and their training.
Absolutely.
If they believe they're out here and going to be, you know, shot by suspects all the time, If they feel as if they're in hostile territory, they are more likely to use their weapons and end up killing people versus if they see themselves as members of these communities.
Mm-hmm. How do you change mindset? You know, how do you change the way people look at each other? That's the real question when it comes to police officers and the community. Coming up, is the lack of parenting the reason for the riots in Baltimore and Ferguson? Well, guess what? Jeb Bush, who's running for president, that's what he thinks. If you're thinking about starting a small business, microloans could be the way to go. Ron Busby, the U.S. Black Chamber president, tells us why.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now. With Roland Martin.
Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake says cameras will now be installed in police vans. Vans similar to the one Freddie Gray suffered his fatal injury in back in April. This quote from the mayor's press conference Wednesday: "We're working through a process that will place cameras with recording capabilities in the backs of all our police vans to ensure that we have a more complete record of what occurs there." The camera inside the van in question in the Gray case was a non-recording camera. Drivers use it only to monitor passengers, and that camera, ironically, wasn't working at the time. Mm. The city also is reviewing riot gear used by police during the unrest. There are reports some of the gear malfunctioned. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, who is running for president, is placing the blame for the riots in Ferguson and Baltimore, get this, on the lack of parental guidance in the home. This is a quote from the Republican presidential candidate during a recent Q&A session at a pharmaceutical company. "Kids in this country are aimlessly wandering around in their lives because they've never been told they were capable of learning. They've never been challenged to achieve far better. They've never really had the kind of mentoring and nurturing that gives them the sense their lives could be better." You see, what happens in Baltimore and Ferguson, you see those tragedies play out. You see people becoming so despondent, they take actions that are horrific. Jeb Bush wants to be the third member of the Bush clan to become president. Let's bring our panel back in. Washington Post reporter Wesley Lowry, associate editor at The Root, Danielle Belton, and leadership strategist Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver. Well, I guess he didn't see that a child was laying dead in the street before the riots in Ferguson. I mean, it is just unbelievable. Well, not, no, it isn't. Let me say, you know what? I take that completely back. No, it isn't. But that he could say that in such casualness and actually believe that that is the problem. When he looks at black people rioting over the deaths of unarmed black men in the street, he thinks it's because of the lack of mentoring.
Exactly. We were really surprised because Jeb Bush had the same reaction to what happened in Charleston initially when the initial reports came out. And he just didn't want to talk about race. He didn't want to identify that it could be racial. Mm-hmm. He wanted to look for anything else could possibly be. Mm-hmm. And so this is just reflective of that. He just does not want to talk about race. He's not comfortable with it. And so you try to find anything else to talk about behind it. And it's just like, oh, well, maybe we talk about parental responsibility. Maybe the kids need mentoring. It's like, no, kids need to not be shot in the street.
Yeah. You know, we were just talking a minute ago, sort of about the psyche of, you know, whether it's a police officer or anybody else that just looks at a black life and just doesn't have that same value, doesn't place value on it, and just thinks like, oh, they're thugs. Why are they acting this way? Whatever. That's the kind of mentality of not looking at the real problem, but looking at just what you think is the symptom of it. And I mean, mentoring is the reason for, you know, our police brutality problem in America.
I mean, he didn't even acknowledge the police brutality problem. He called the protests horrific.
You're right.
Interesting, dead bodies in the street, broken necks aren't horrific.
Right.
But protesting those acts are horrific. And, you know, it's very interesting because, no, he doesn't want to talk about race. He doesn't want to talk about black life. But, you know, he'll fill out a form and say that he's Hispanic. Hello.
Yes,
call
he will.
Him
well,
out
he
on
needs
that.
The Hispanic
call
vote.
Him out on
right.
That.
Who's
exactly.
going to call him out on that, though? That's my frustration, because even in this Q&A, that he's sitting there and he could make remarks like that and nobody is calling him out on it. And I worry about, you know, the casts, the many Republican candidates that are online for these debates. Who's going to be asking those hard questions?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so important that you have a diverse set of people asking questions of candidates on both sides of the aisle, because, I mean, there's no candidate in this race whatsoever who's been great on these issues or been willing to engage these issues in an honest way. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, one thing that's really interesting here is that the unrest we saw in Ferguson, that we saw in Baltimore, the protests we've seen across the country, are not about some family structure or some easy kind of buzzword. You know, for people who spent time on the ground, a lot of us have spent a lot of time on the ground in these places, this is about something that a lot of conservative Republicans should be able to understand, a distrust and a breakdown of the social contract between citizens and their government. The black citizens of Ferguson or black citizens of Baltimore saying, our government's not legitimate because they're killing us in the streets, and there's no accountability there. Right. That's, in fact, a very relatively, you know, small government conservative mindset, sure, that this government owes us something,
sure,
and that they can't just, the government can't just act however it wants to, sure, act. It owes us,
right, this big government,
be, it should,
right,
be accountable to,
right,
us. That's what the people in Ferguson were saying. When you pick up a brick and throw it through a glass window, or when you light a gas station on fire, what you're saying is that you're right, the social order is not working, that this government, these rules are not legitimate.
That's,
why,
right,
are they not legitimate? Because this 18-year-old is dead in the street and there's,
that's,
no,
right,
accountability for,
that's,
it.
That's right.
And so you don't have to condone violence to understand it or understand the root, and you don't have to obfuscate about whether this being about a lack of parents or about it.
Right.
No, what this is about is a lack of legitimacy in government.
Yeah, and you know, the family structure is not the answer to what's rampant in our society as it relates to race, the relationship with the police, and I just think that he would completely ignore that conversation to say that it's about parenting and back to those values and all that. I just think it's going to be interesting. Whoever is running, whether it's Hillary and Jeb or whoever, they've got to address these issues.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that this year, these voters in 2016 are going to allow candidates to get away with not talking about what's happening with police, not talking about racism in America, and, you know, all the other things that we continue to deal with every day that come up all the time. But I thank you guys so much. Coming up, the president and CEO of the U.S. Black Chambers breaks down their new microloan program. Find out how it might be able to help you. Spice up your barbecue with Chef Joseph Pear. He'll share his grilling tips coming up. And one man's cab ride for love landed him in jail. Now, that crazy story and more is later on What the Hell? Stay up to date and informed on news1.com. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Mo Ivory or on our News One Facebook page. It's 20 after the hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Roland recently sat down with Ron Busby, the president and CEO of Black Chambers, Inc., to talk about their new microloan program for black business owners.
Folks, between 2002 and 2007, black-owned businesses grew more than 60% compared to the national average of 18%. Yet, access to capital is a crucial issue. In fact, a March 15, 2014 story that was in the Wall Street Journal showed that it was an amazing story. $23.09 billion in small business loans were handed out in 2013. Black folks got about $385 million. Of that $23.09 billion. The real issue is, how do you grow a business if you do not have access to capital? Well, the U.S. Black Chamber, Inc., the Community Economic Development Corporation, is kicking off a microloan program specifically targeted to black businesses. Ron Busby, the president and CEO of U.S. Black Chambers, Inc., joins me right now. So, Ron, we talked about this many times before. At the end of the day, there are people out there who want to grow their business, but the bottom line is the tight lending standards. I've had the SBA administrator on here. They've made some changes to how they also how folks can qualify. So what is this microloan program? How much are we talking, and who specifically are you targeting?
Very good questions, and I agree. It's our number one concern to start, grow, and expand businesses. And even though the SBA has made some improvements, as you stated, the numbers are still too low. Even at 2% of the loans that they have made have been to minority and black
firms. It was about 8.2 or 8.5% in 2008, the last year President George W. Bush.
Correct.
And so we've seen that the recession, the economic downturn, has devastated African Americans being able to get small business loans.
Yeah. And the average size loan that they made was $454,000, and they wanted to increase to $500,000. That's not where we fit in. The average black business is doing far less in annualized revenue for that, and so we will never be a good loan to a SBA qualified or even for a bank. And so for most firms, we're looking at how do we get them the dollars that they need. And so the U.S. Black Chambers is creating a microloan program that we will be rolling out this year. We started the pilot program in South Carolina, where we've had great success. Then we moved it up to Wisconsin. We've also increased the loan capacity there. We're saying for small black firms that can't get qualified through the traditional means, we're going to be there to be able to bridge that gap, bridge that loan for them. What's unique about our program is that it will be tied to an entrepreneurial training program. The one thing that we don't want to do is provide access to the capital and still have you fail because you didn't have your business plan together, you didn't understand the market, or you didn't understand your actual financials. Not only do we want to make sure that you can get the small $10,000, $25,000 loan, but we want you to end up in a traditional bank, and so we want to be able to carry that financial capacity to a traditional loan so that you can get the dollars that you need ultimately.
So what's the cap in terms of these micro loans? How much are we talking? What's the cap?
$25,000, $50,000, but we want...
So is $50,000 your max in terms of...
Yeah, that's where we want to start off the first 2 years. If you want and need more than that, we're not saying that you can't get it, but you won't be able to get it from the U.S. Black Chamber. We'll be able to hand you to one of our banking partners.
And when we talk about the micro loans, again, for many people, they are left in a position of, well, do I tap my personal savings? Do I tap money that I might have invested in a 401k to start my business? This allows for them to be able to begin the process of starting their business. It might be buying equipment, things along those lines, without having to basically strip them down to nothing in their personal savings.
Exactly. Our particular fund is really for not startups. We want you to be in business for at least 3 years. To have employees, to 2 to 3 employees, and to have a good positive understanding of your market, of your business. We'll work with you. We want you to be successful long term. We truly believe that this economy is really geared towards small business, but not necessarily for black businesses. We want to make sure that they have the resources as well as the acumen to be able to have sustainability in our community.
We have folks talk about we need more small businesses. I say no, we need more businesses with greater capacity. Yeah. And so so let me ask you, so if somebody comes to you, let's say a couple of folks with PR agencies, or let's say a couple of like-minded businesses, will you say, you know what, have you considered partnering with this person? Because having a business over here that does $100,000 in revenue or $125,000, and having one over here that's doing $125,000, $150,000, to me, it's smarter to say, no, why don't you actually have one business, one office, one back-end operation, as opposed to these individual small entities?
Yeah, the number one concern for large corporations and government agencies that they give us now for not doing business with black firms is size and scale. They'll say you're too small to be able to take advantage of the opportunities. And so there's some truth to that. Obviously, large corporations have to do more with less. And so it's difficult for them to find that needle in the haystack, to find that good small firm. And so we say, well, let's bring them together. And so this year at our School of Chamber Management, we will spend a full day talking about joint ventures, mergers, acquisitions, and how to grow that size and scale. Because again, I agree with you, but we got to have two tracks. We got to have more startups that are going to be successful.
Right.
But we also have to push those firms that have the capacity to be able to grow that need either different relationships, different funding opportunities, as well as different contract opportunities that we can put them together. And the other thing that we think is important is the $1 trillion of spend that we do have as a minority community. We can take those dollars, make sure that they're staying in our community, and I believe some of those small businesses can grow to be able to hire additional employees in our communities.
Okay. Where can folks get information on the microloan program?
usblackchambers.org. They can find all the information there, or you can find it on our Twitter or Facebook pages as
well. All right, Brian, I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. New job numbers are out this morning. The national unemployment rate drops because of June job growth. Breaking it down by race, current unemployment rates are 9.5% for African Americans, 6.6% for Hispanics, and 4.6% for whites, and 3.8% for Asians. Coming up, Chef Joseph Pure is here to help you turn into a grill master just in time for your 4th of July cookouts. That's coming up next. Plus, a racist Confederate flag parade goes absolutely wrong. You don't want to miss this crazy story. Stay up to date and informed on News1.com. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Mo Ivory or, of course, on our News1 Facebook page. It's 31 after the hour. Stay right with us. We will be back.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
I am so proud of this next story, although I have to say that it did give me some body issues. World-renowned ballerina Misty Copeland has been named the principal dancer for the American Ballet Theater, making her the first African-American female principal dancer in their 75-year history. And she has a body that nobody can achieve, so just don't even try. Look at that. I mean, I've seen her pictures. You'd have to dance every day of your life to get that body, but I am so proud of her. Look at how beautiful she is. You may remember Copeland from her Under Armour commercial that went viral and got 4 million YouTube views in less than a week. She was also handpicked by Prince to accompany him on his latest world tour. That is awesome. So a huge congratulations shout out to Misty Copeland for continuing to make history, make it look so beautiful in the ballet world. Girl, we are so proud of you. It's almost time to fire up the grills for the 4th of July, and Chef Joseph Perry, wait a minute. How do you say your last name?
Perry.
Like Marie
with a P.
Perry is here, because I've been butchering it all morning long, is here to tell you how to spice up your barbecue recipes just in time for the holiday weekend. And welcome. Thank you, and I'm sorry about the way I've been messing up your name. But
no,
this looks incredible, right? Especially for the morning. I was saying, like, this is what I would like to have for breakfast. So tell us all about it.
So basically what we have here is a pina colada glazed bone-in pork rib chop. So it's the idea of taking the flavors, taking a lean cut of pork, putting it on the grill, because A, it is the summertime, so you really want to have that flexibility to grill food. So grilling pork chop and grilling pork is fantastic because it's a lean cut. This recipe contains less than 7 grams of fat, right?
Wow, so what was the idea? Pina colada glazed rib eye pork chops. Okay, first of all, do you just go to the supermarket and buy rib eye pork chops?
So you go to the supermarket, you can ask the butcher there to. Typically, you go to the supermarket and find the pork loin section. So you find the pork loin, and you say, hey, I would like this portioned out. So this cut, it's a 3 1/4 inch cut. So you want to ask for the butcher to cut that to that size.
Okay.
And you're looking for the bone-in side. So the bone adds flavor. So it's not a lot of fat, right? So you want to add flavor somehow. So the bone is going to add the flavor to the pork.
Okay, and then tell me how you prepare it. What are the rest of the ingredients? Before, you know, most people think, well, I do, because I'm not really that good of a griller, you know, so I kind of just take a piece of meat, put some Lowry's on it, and throw it on the grill. So that never really works out well for anyone in my household, but I enjoy it. But so you take the meat, how many hours or minutes before
hours.
You're like about to throw it on the grill
no,
do you do
no,
this?
Hours.
No hours?
This
okay.
Is, this is
it sounded
minutes.
Like
this
that way.
Maybe 20 minutes out of your life.
Okay.
All right, so you
okay.
take the meat, you season the meat with a little salt, coarse salt, kosher salt, if you have it in your pantry. Let the meat rest before you grill it. That gives you time for your grill to heat up. You want to get your grill to about 450 degrees before you put the meat on. So in that time that the grill's heating up, your meat's resting, the salt is kind of drawing out some of that moisture and implanting that flavor into the pork itself. You put the pork on. I cook it for about 6 minutes each side.
Mm.
So you get a nice little crosshatch grill marks on there. At that point, you want to take it off and let it rest for about 3 to 4 minutes. And while it's resting, you want the temperature to be maybe 145 to 160. So you don't have to overcook the pork. And that's a common misconception in our community.
Right.
Like we're overcooking the product, and you don't have to do that. And then you can just glaze it. The sauce is the glaze.
Okay, so I never knew meat had to rest.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the first time I've ever heard the term meat
you
resting.
You gotta let it rest.
It's been active. So so after you put the, what has my meat been doing that it needs rest? Okay. I don't know. Now you just rest there. You just go, okay, you know what, I can't have it in front of me anymore.
When you don't let it rest, what happens is the juices run away.
The juices run away from the meat. They go, I'm leaving.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you gotta let it rest.
You gotta let your meat rest. Does everybody see this? It looks so good. Now, pork is better than red meat, right?
Pork is better
than red meat. It's a healthy alternative.
It's a healthier alternative to red meat.
Okay.
And that's one of the most important things.
That is delicious.
It's the summertime, right? So we're having cookouts. It's 4th of July weekend. So
I want a little more pina colada on there, but no, I'm kidding. It's really, really good. Mm-hmm. So you just tell me about the glaze. How do you make that?
So the glaze is a reduction of some coconut milk, a little garlic, cilantro, green onions, and ginger. So you basically, we don't use any fat, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no oil, there's no butter with this recipe. So we take the coconut milk and kind of saute the garlic and the green onions together, right? So then as that's reducing, so you want to basically let that get a little caramelization on it. So it's going to get a little dark, a little brown inside the pan. Then you want to add about a cup of coconut milk and let that reduce down, get so it's nice and thick. Then you're gonna add about a half a cup of pineapple juice. So that's where the pina colada part comes in.
Okay, so that's where we're tasting the rich, the juiciness of the steak. Mm-hmm. The steak, see? I thought it was steak, right?
Yeah. So
of the pork. No, it really does taste that juicy. And so you don't have to really, like you said, there's no fat, so you don't have to rely on the fat falling all in to make it juicy. What do you guys think?
No, it's delicious. I'm wondering, are you handing out the recipe?
You can find the recipe at www.porkbeinspired.com /grilled grill crashers. And that recipe is available there for anyone to have access to. It's also a couple other great recipes that you can use and find on the Pork Be Inspired website. So it's a fun collaboration, and the food is good, and the recipes are fantastic, and it's light.
Now, I noticed that you have a bunch of other sort of dressings around the pork.
Right,
so like, pretty?
This is just the garnishes. So we have some fresh cilantro, some lime, some ginger, and some green onions just to bring it out. So if you're having an entertaining, you want to present it to the group, and this is what you want to do. You want to present it with everything you basically had on the dish itself.
Okay, that looks wonderful. So what about some other, can you do this, can you take that same pina colada glaze, and can you do it over other meats or fish
or anything
like that? You can.
It'd be great with fish. You can do it with
tilapia, because you know that's what we eat.
It's a thinner fish.
What would be a better fish?
The only fish, if there was a pork fish, that would be the best fish to go with.
And it's gonna need to rust as well.
Yeah.
It's pork fish is tired too.
But the glaze is fantastic. It's a very versatile glaze, and that's the other part about pork. It's a very versatile protein to use anyway. It lends well to sweet flavors, savory flavors. You can, you know, heavy barbecue sauce or something light. It's just lemon juice and olive oil.
So. Okay, and so what are the kinds of things that you could pair with this, and in terms of, you know, you want to throw some vegetable skewers on the grill?
Throw some vegetable skewers on the grill. I recently served this at a backyard cookout with little butternut squash and quinoa and farro salad. So basically just steamed up some butternut squash, tossed it with some red quinoa and farro and a little lemon juice and olive oil, and it worked well. Because it's the summertime, you don't want to think heavy. You want to have your meal as light as possible because you don't want to be weighed down in the hot sun. So the butternut squash and quinoa salad worked fantastic with this dish. Also something like a southern staple like Hoppin' John.
Mm.
So a little black eyed peas, little jasmine rice, hit it up with some mint and some cilantro, kind of tie in those same flavors, and it's a good dish.
That sounds very, very healthy, and I'd like to add a cocktail to that to just give it a little
colada.
Bit more of something. Yeah, you know, an actual pina colada. So tell everybody where they can reach you and your website. And
so you can find me at Todd Gray's Watershed over here in Northeast, 1225 First Street, located inside the Hilton Garden Inn on the second floor. Also, you can follow me on Facebook at Chef Joseph L. Paris III, and Instagram and Twitter at Chef Joseph L.
All right. Well, Chef Parit, thank you so much for feeding us this morning.
Wow. Yeah,
this wonderful, you know, this wonderful dish right here. And it's porkinspired.com,
pork
right?
Be inspired.
Porkbeinspired.com. Get inspired with your pork for this 4th of July. No, this really did taste wonderful. And you can find the recipe, I'm sure, on news1.com. Next on News One Now, Tony Reds, Lauren Williams, and Lamont King join us for What the Hell Thursday. And you know it's going to be crazy. Stay up to date and informed on News One. You can always hit me up with your thoughts on at Mo Ivory on Twitter or on our News One Facebook page. It is 44 after the hour. Stay with us. We're going to get back to eating, but we will be right back.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
It is birthday shout out time. Rapper, I can't believe this. Rapper Moni Love turns 45.
Is that her?
Yes, Moni in the middle. And on this day in history, in 1777, Vermont becomes the first U.S. territory to abolish slavery. In 1822, DeMarc Vesey is hanged from leading a slave revolt in Charleston, South Carolina. In 1943, Lieutenant Charles Hall becomes the first black pilot to shoot down a Nazi plane during World War II. And in 1964, President Lyndon B. Johnson signs the Civil Rights Act. And lastly, in 1973, the National Black Network becomes the first black-owned and operated radio network. Now, today is What the Hell Thursday, where we talk about all the crazy stories trending in the news. Joining me today are Mr. 24/7 himself, radio personality Tony Redds, digital correspondent Ms. Lauren Williams, and media personality Lamont King. Okay, so how you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Awesome. Yes, it is What the Hell Thursday. And how far exactly would you go for love? John Williams Jr. rode 300 miles, yes, 300 miles in a cab from Philadelphia to New York City to surprise his fiance. When he didn't have enough money to pay the $749 fare, he was arrested and taken to jail.
It's two sides to that story. I'm going to blame two people.
Okay.
For one, you heard Bismarck old song, Oh Baby You, when he went to the campus.
You got what I need? Yeah,
he
okay.
He went to the campus, he showed up, and his girl was kissing another man in the mouth. You don't sneak up on your girl, you got to let her know you're coming.
Okay, all right. Well, he wanted to get engaged.
You have to sneak up on an engagement. You got
to
let her know you're coming because you might find something that you don't want
to
see.
And then on top of that,
the cab driver. I blame the cab driver because you don't got my money up front. We ain't going nowhere.
I mean, who takes a cab from Philadelphia
to
New York?
Why not catch the regional rail or the subway?
Uber.
A cab?
You got the Uber for love.
Regional rail. No.
You got the Uber for
love. You cannot get in an Uber and cross state lines and not have the money because the credit card, if it does not charge right then and there, you will have some big problems.
But see, if you see it, look at him though. He had to drive 300 for love. He wasn't no local love.
He had no local love. But I know when that cab driver told him, when that cab driver told him,
seven states away love. That's what that is.
That's crazy.
That cab driver told him $749. He was like, don't have it. Okay, there's a parade celebrating everything these days. We know that. Even the controversial Confederate flag. Residents of Dalton, Georgia, do you know where that is? It's deep in the woods of Georgia. Rode through the streets with battle flag adorned trucks. So the police closed the streets and provided escorts. And then there was a bit of a problem.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. One, two, three, four hits. One,
ding,
two.
Ding.
Yes. That is exactly what happened.
That's what you call redneck road rage.
Yes. That is very good. That is redneck road rage. Well, I mean, considering everything that's been going on, I know that there's been a slew of people trying to bring that believe the Confederate flag should still stay, doing things to make it, more apparent. There is a gentleman who jogs around my neighborhood with the Confederate flag.
Wow.
He has honestly been doing it for 15 to 20 years that I've been living there.
You live in Dalton?
No, I do not live in Dalton. He has been jogging every day with the flag. And it has only been recently that the neighborhood saw any problem with it because of the Confederate flag controversy.
Yeah.
And I had to write back on our little neighborhood website, he's been doing it for the last 15, 20 years.
Right.
Where have you been and why are we just making it an issue now? So, I mean, I think that a lot of the stuff, like the parade where they bumped each other, it's just really for more awareness and, to bring things out. But
see, he's jogging in your neighborhood. That means you need to get out there with the red, black, and green flag.
Yeah.
A lot
of people said they were going to come out with their
American
own flags.
They pulled a show from the TV because of the car with the flag on it.
Yes. I never really noticed that the Dukes of Hazzard had that Confederate flag on the top of the car.
It was called the General.
It
was named after the general led the revolt.
It never clicked, though.
Could do anything. That car was land on police cars and ditching. Never broke down.
It never did. Never got a flat tire. Never did anything.
Saying, man, come on. The General Lee.
Yeah.
Pulled the General Lee.
But you noticed, though, on Dukes of Hazzard, though, it was always running the black cars off of the road. So that's why they gotta change it. They gotta revisit that. You know, okay, we can't have that. Cool.
It's 2015. But there was some moonshine runners though.
Moonshine, that's right.
So that's what, see, with the parade, they had too much moonshine.
I think
there's a lot going on.
There was a lot going on. That's in Dalton, Georgia.
I think Bree might have got in there and cut the brake line or something. You know, the girl that got up on top of the Capitol building.
I love her.
Yes.
I love her. Did you see?
The ultimate pole dancer. The ultimate.
A pole dancing with a purpose.
I mean, yeah,
pole dancing
with a purpose. You got a pole dancing with a purpose.
Listen, I love Brie because she suited up.
Yes.
Like, did she not have every piece of arm? She had the harness and she would clink, 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 and she was up in that pole. Physically fit. She cut that thing down. She did what we were all thinking was just, why is this so hard? Somebody climb up there and cut the flag down.
She had the fanny pack, too, for the tips. I don't know if y'all saw that. No, like right here for the tips. That's what... Crazy.
No, she did not.
Bree is a genius.
No, but you know, I know that she's going to have to pay the price for doing that because, of course, it was a crime. But I really do tip my hat to her. It was a crime. It is a crime to pull a flag down on a state capitol.
Peaceful for the Mile High Club.
Yeah, it is.
Interview.
It was. I'm glad you said that, Mark, because it is. To me, I feel the same way that it is peaceful protest. But you know what? We will keep up with that story. We'll keep up with Brie and everything else that's going on. Just a little humor there on What the Hell Thursday. I'm Mo Ivory, and this is News One Now. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
And we're back with What the Hell Thursday. It's Tony, Lauren, and Lamont, and me, Mo Ivory. So, okay, in these next clips, two plump policemen can't seem to catch, get this, handcuffed suspect. The suspect is... taken out of the police car in front of the station and makes a clean getaway with a light jog down the street.
Oh, wow.
You see that?
Oh, God.
The guy handcuffed.
The police officers are unable to get that gentleman with his hands behind his back in handcuffs. Here they come. Here they come. There they come. Well, they are surely in shape police officers.
But he's not even running. He's like dancing. He's
right.
Look. He's sashaying.
His victory stroll.
Now,
he's twerking down the street.
I can't take it.
You know, the World Police and Fire Games was in town this week. They got cut, obviously.
I don't understand. Why is there not some mandatory shape that police officers have to be
a
in?
Physical fitness.
On a yearly basis.
They're in a shape.
You about to get pulled over. I ain't saying nothing bad about the police.
They were in a circle.
I work by the police. I ain't saying nothing bad about the police.
But don't you think that would make a police officer more prone to pull out his gun if he is unable to run after a suspect?
That makes sense.
He lucky there was a white and a black officer chasing him, because something else would have happened if it was, you know.
But it should be some amount of physical fitness that you got to maintain to, if you're going to be a foot patrol or beat cop, so to speak.
Absolutely.
To be able to chase people.
Once a year, maybe?
Just throw the little batons on it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't help that when a police officer goes to, like, Dunkin' Donuts or any of those places, they get donuts and coffee for free.
Yeah.
I don't think that's fair.
He could have, like, turned the taser on and just threw it at him and hope that it caught
Starsky and Hutch ring.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that they need to, you know, slow down on the donuts so that they can, you know, do you see that?
Yeah, he's on a leisure stroll. There's no reason they didn't catch him.
And he has his hands behind his back.
And he's wearing skinny jeans. How hard is that to run?
Did you see my man right there?
Right.
Freeze! Who bought the pullet? Freeze!
Okay, on to the next one. Recently, in New York, a wheelchair-bound man robbed the Santander Bank in Astoria. He passed a sticky note to the teller, and she handed him a bag of money. He was in a wheelchair. He was last seen on surveillance video making his slow getaway down the street. He robbed a bank in a wheelchair and rolled out in a wheelchair. I mean, what kind of security is going on at this bank?
Well, he must have had a rollover account at the bank. So he was switching his money from savings to checking. And he just dipped out.
I'm trying to figure it out. My man is in the wheelchair, and he passed the note, give me the money.
Give me the money.
Right.
Give me the money.
So at that time, did she see a weapon?
I'm thinking that too. Did she hit the clip under? Isn't there a clip under the?
From what I would have laughed them off.
The checking.
Oh, you want me to give it to you?
Or just jump over the counter.
How you want it? Just saying, large bills, small bills.
I'd have killed some time
while I hit the button to get somebody
jump
over there.
Over the counter, land
absolutely.
His lap.
Well, guys, listen, anywhere. We got to get out of here so we don't go over. But it's been totally fun on What the Hell Thursday, and we will be right back. Oh, no. Have a great afternoon. That's it. We're done. See, I was all into the moment there. Thank you.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.